And good morning, and welcome to Word of Mouth. I'm your host, Jim Wunderlich, and today I'll be chatting with Mike LoCascio, an award-winning photojournalist for ABC News Channel 7 in Chicago. While at Channel 7, Mike has covered a wide range of local and national news stories. And in the process, he has garnered 15 Emmy nominations and 3 Emmy Awards. Mike, it has been over 2 years since you were last a guest here at Word of Mouth. I can't believe the time's gone by that fast, and thanks for returning to Word of Mouth.
Oh, thanks for having me. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was one of your first guests here a couple of years ago.
I think you were my first or second guest, yeah.
I believe I was. And you know, that's quite an introduction. You know, I only paid for the mediocre introduction, so I'm going to have to write you a check for the rest of that. But thank you.
Well, anyway, it's a pleasure to have you, and
no,
thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Thanks for taking the day off. And, you know, I'm always curious, as a photojournalist, you cover a wide range of stories, some that are, you know, upbeat, uplifting, mm-hmm. some absolutely horrific. Every day is different. And I'm just wondering, how are those stories assigned, and how much input do you have in choosing a story to report on? I guess ultimately, who's the guy in charge when you come in and says to you, okay, Mike, you're doing this story. Who decides these stories?
Typical day for me, and probably for most people who like me work in broadcasting, when you come into work, you don't really actually know what you're going to be covering. You may have an idea. I listen to the radio in the morning, so I sometimes have an idea of what the stories of the day are. However, I won't really know for sure until I get to work. But the way the typical newsroom works is the powers that be.
Who are the powers that be? The
news managers, your news director, your assistant news director, your executive producers, your producers, your reporters, your assignment editors. They will all get together in the morning and they will have an editorial meeting. And at this editorial meeting, they will divvy up the stories. They will determine who does what stories, who's going to be live, who's going to be in-house. And that usually determines how the stories are going to be divvied up as far as reporters. And then once the reporters are assigned, then who's going to, in my case, the photographer, who the photographer is going to be assigned.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
This is sort of a related tangent.
Okay.
Okay, so imagine I'm watching, I'm a guy who spins the dial.
Sure.
So I happen, just for the heck of it, at 10 o'clock, we'll say, 10 o'clock news, I spin around 2, 5, 7.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, that same group of people must be in each building because it's the same stories.
Oh, absolutely.
And then as I go through that newscast, I'll keep spinning. And so is that just quirky, or are these people come from the same basically point of view? What I'm getting at is why?
You know, a lot of the stories that are done are predetermined ahead of time, usually through press releases, especially right now. You're in a political season right now.
Right.
So a lot of times the politicians, they'll put out press releases announcing public appearances. So you know that when a politician announces a public appearance, everybody's going to be there. It's rare that we cover stories that are, so to speak, exclusive or one of a kind, because
It is
such a big town, but yet all the stories are very similar. So we're always tend to meet up at the same place at the same time, covering a lot of the same stories. Because once one station or newspaper or radio station does a story, then usually everybody tends to jump on it and do the story at the same time as well.
Now, this is true at the network level, too.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's just kind of a quirky, as an observer, it's always been very interesting to me That as you turn the dial, and this can be at 5:30 with the network
right.
news, it's the same thing.
And yet most people, I don't believe most people who are as attuned as you are to tuning to different stations, you have people who are very loyal to one station or another. And so a lot of them don't usually sit and do story counts. So I don't think most people are sitting at home
okay,
going.
All right, okay.
And
this was a related tangent. I don't have an axe to grind or anything.
Oh no, no. But
I just wondered
kind of funny
if there was
because
an answer.
When you walk in the newsroom and there's just a wall of monitors, and it's the same in every newsroom. There's
sure.
a wall of monitors, and everybody's watching everybody.
Right, right, right.
So if Channel 7 is doing a story, it's guaranteed that Channel 5 is watching it, and Channel 2 is watching it, and Channel 9. And if Channel 2 is doing a story, guaranteed we're watching it. So everybody's watching everybody. And you're always trying to cover your bases to make sure you covered that story
sure.
or they covered the story that you did. I've been on stories before where you think, oh wow, we've got a real good story here. We've got something really special. And then within a matter of minutes of it airing, then all of a sudden, here comes everybody else to cover the story.
Right, right, right.
And
right.
that happens quite a bit. But back to the original question, once the stories are determined for
sure.
the day. Then it goes to the assignment desk. And the assignment desk is like a dispatcher, if you will. So what they do is they've got a huge dry erase board on the back wall that they list all the stories of the day, who's covering it, who the photographer is, the times, and then they're the ones that assign the crews. So when I walk in, my typical work week is Wednesday through Friday, 10 to 6. So when I walk in at 10, by about 10:15, I'm going upstairs, I'm checking in, and by about 10:20, I have my story for the day. And it you never know what it's going to be. It could be breaking news, it could be a feature, it could be politics, it could be sports, it could be a little of everything.
Oh, yeah, you've done everything from tornadoes to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's run the gamut on a national level. And we can talk about those as we get into it. The inauguration, things like that. I mean, you've the election night in Grant Park. I mean, I can go on and on.
You've done such
a wide variety of stories. I was just curious on the assignment part. And maybe another thing that's kind of interesting. So if you're out covering a story, you've been assigned and you're out there with your reporter and you're doing the putting it together. If something were to break and you've been assigned this story by the powers that be, and something that breaks that looks to you more interesting
mm-hmm.
and to the reporter more interesting, would you then go over and possibly cover that and drop
sure.
that story?
Sure.
Has that happened before?
I'm sure it has. Not that that comes to mind in
okay.
recent memory, but let's say we're covering a school board meeting or something.
Sure, sure.
Just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And let's say something happens in that school board meeting. Maybe, you know, God forbid somebody should happen to start choking and somebody performs the Heimlich maneuver and kind of saves the day. Then that school board meeting kind of becomes a moot point because now the story is about how somebody in that board meeting was saved by somebody who performed the Heimlich maneuver, and we were there to cover it. So it changes the dynamic of the story almost immediately. And yes, we would absolutely probably – we'd still talk about the fact that there was a school board meeting, but we would then focus on the fact that this is what happened at the school board meeting as an example.
Well, I tell you what. So if you're there at the – if we take that as an example.
Right.
I guess I'm putting you on the spot again. But now you're there with a reporter, and you are trained visually.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to as a journalist as well, we can talk about that as we go on. So and the two are intertwined. Are there certain shots with this, for example, the scene that's going on with the Heimlich maneuver? Because you're thinking visually now,
right?
I'm curious. Is there a thread? Are there certain shots now that you would start to look for in terms of shooting that particular scene, and because it's happened now at breakneck speed, I assume then with all this video that's going on, you have a responsibility now to shoot as much as you can of this of the occurrence.
A lot of times when a story like that happens, the story just it unfolds in front of you. So you capture the moment. So you're really just focusing on capturing the moment. And I think what you're looking for is how do I frame my story? How do I as far as like my camera movements and stuff.
Well, certain shots that you'd want to get or
absolutely.
Or avoid,
I guess. A lot of times when it is breaking, you let it play out in front of your camera because that's how it's happening at the time is it's playing out. And once the moment is done, then you kind of go into a different frame of mind where it's like, okay, now I've got the breaking news on camera. Now I can go back and I can sort of just clean it up with getting reaction shots, getting reaction interviews, getting more shots of a scene to sort of tell the story, to sort of help him, tell the story even more so. As an example, since we last talked, there was a horrific tornado that went through the town of Washington down near Peoria about a year ago. And we went down there. We actually drove through a couple of the tornadoes because they had started in Peoria and they were working their way up north towards the city, and we were actually on our way down, and we were just outside of Coal City. That was one of the towns that was hit, and we actually drove through the outskirts of the tornado. I mean, the truck was just blowing in all different directions, and it was either keep driving or get blown off the road, and we just kept pushing through.
What were you seeing on the side? I mean,
you weren't seeing anything. It was horizontal rain. You couldn't see more than probably 100, 200 feet in front of you. So you were just crawling. But at the same time, you're like, let's just get out of this because if we don't, we're gonna be a casualty in this. So we just kept pressing on. And fortunately, we've got a very heavy truck. I mean, the live trucks are about 10,000 pounds. So at least we did have some weight. But we just kept pushing through. Once we got away from that cell, you started seeing the damage, and we were still about an hour away from Washington. So you were seeing little bits and pieces of damage out in these farm fields, debris fields, just laying everywhere. And then once we got to Washington, it was a whole different story. We got there and there was an entire town, one whole section of town that was completely gone, and you could not believe the amount of destruction that was down there. And we were fortunate enough to have somebody take us through. And the question is, where do you start?
Yes, that was going to be my next question.
Where do you start? Because you see what used to be houses that are now just piles of rubble, and you see people who are in obvious shock, who are just coming out for the first time and seeing what's left of their homes, their belongings, trying to find whatever they can because now it's scattered for miles. And the first thought that goes through your mind is, where do you start? And I think for me, it was just start shooting. Just document this. And as time goes on, the images will come to you. You'll spot things along the way that'll catch your eye. And then you immediately just start focusing on that kind of stuff. But we would run into people who were just coming out of, like I said, just coming out of the house or just coming out of hiding for the first time after the tornado, and they just had no idea what to say. And we went up and we were talking to them, and how they talk is beyond me because I don't know if I would be able to talk. But I think at that point you're in such shock and you don't really know what to do or say. And I think for a lot of people it was actually very therapeutic for them to talk initially. And that's when you get the real emotion of what's happened. That's when you're capturing the essence of what really happened. Is in those early moments. And so, I think that those are probably the stories that are the most compelling are after when they first happen, when it's still so raw after happening.
Now, you mentioned the images. There were some powerful images in addition to the people talking, which is very powerful itself, obviously. What were some of those images that you were able to capture on film when you got back to the editing room and you were looking, you're going, oh my goodness.
We were actually in the middle of an expressway. It was a four-lane expressway.
And then the editing bay is right there in the truck.
I set the truck up and we were actually on a median in the middle of an expressway. And obviously it wasn't very express. A lot of it was shut down. But that was that was kind of our office space for the next probably 10 to 12 hours mm-hmm. while the initial assessments were being done by police as well as recovery. Fortunately, there were with the amount of damage, there were very few casualties in terms of lives. I think there was like one or two lives that were lost, which is still tremendous.
They called it a miracle at the time. Yeah.
Oh yeah, you see the video of what had happened, and it's just absolutely amazing that that people survived that. And I think it speaks a lot to the quality of construction that people had with their homes, and the fact that they knew what to do and where to go in the case of a tornado.
The images, though, were there any images that you were able you recall? I know I've been putting you on the spot.
I remember. Yep. There was a state trooper who lived in one of these subdivisions that mm-hmm. was hit, and the state trooper's car was blown away about three blocks. It was literally taken from their driveway, and it was somersaulted three or four blocks down the road.
Jeez.
And it was on the back of a flatbed that pulled right up alongside of our truck. Good and I looked God. Over and it was pancaked, and it had two or three 2x4s sticking out of it.
Jeez.
And I remember asking the tow truck driver, said, "Where did you find this thing?" And he explained the whole story to me that mm-hmm, it mm-hmm. belonged to this trooper and mm-hmm. That they found it down the road stuffed in somebody else's front room.
Or their living room.
It became a weapon, so to speak, and it literally just pierced the home. And they had to pull it out of the home and put it up on this flatbed. That's how it was found.
Jeez.
And I remember I immediately grabbed my camera and I shot that image.
That's a tremendous. Yeah, it kind of tells
just,
the story.
Just rubble, just piles mm-hmm. and piles of rubble, and people just walking on what were just planks of wood. Just that were makeshift sidewalks, if you will, because there was no place to walk. So you'd walk on whatever was stable enough to hold your weight, whether it be roof shingles or 2x4s or kitchen counters or whatever. That's what I remember. I remember a teenage boy who was at his aunt's house, and he was just there, had just left, come back, and he found a tattered American flag and hoisted it up on the side of a piece of wood, and he stood near the American flag and saluted it.
Oh my gosh, Mike.
That was the kind of imagery that I remember.
Jeez.
If there was a funny story, ran into a couple who were going through their home, and they were looking for whatever personal belongings they can find, and in all of this, they found their cat, and their cat was alive, and people are screaming and yelling and having a fit. And to capture that, where they got their cat and they're crying and then embracing this cat, mm-hmm, it's just mm-hmm.
very touching.
It was the small things like that that really made it worth being there, because you really got a sense of what these people were going through based on just something like that. And yet this couple, it was funny because they were telling me off camera that they were in the process of remodeling their home, and they were little piece by piece they were remodeling their home as they could afford it. And they said the one part of their house that they absolutely hated was their kitchen. They hated it with a passion because it was ugly. It was the worst looking kitchen they'd ever seen when they bought the house. And yet it was the only thing that survived.
Oh my gosh.
So yet everything around the house is completely gone, but the kitchen is standing there. And they said it was almost just mocking them, because the kitchen that they hated so much was the thing that survived. And it's like the kitchen just got the last laugh in all of this. And it was a moment of levity, where you could at least laugh along with them because they were trying to find what humor they could in all of this.
Were there any obstacles in covering that story? I mean, in other words, are there any things where maybe you're off limits to covering?
In a story like that,
mm-hmm.
it's so new and raw at the time that I don't think anybody really knows what's what. And I think once first responders get down there, They're trying to assess the damage. They're trying to set up a perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, for safety reasons, also because of the fact that the first concern that they've got is now you've got looters. Now you've got people that they want to prevent from getting in there and looting. That's a key thing. And then they don't really want media going through there because now it's a safety issue. So they usually once the dust is settled, so to speak, they'll set up a staging area for us. And they did so within about 12 hours. They had a staging area set up for us just on the outskirts of where the damage was at. And it was a safety zone for us because you have a lot of heavy equipment moving through. You've got a lot of first responders are moving through. And you don't want to be underfoot. I mean, you really don't. You have to tell the story, but at the same time, you don't want to be in people's way. You don't want to be an obstruction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's something that we deal with a lot. And the other thing
trying
is,
to find that line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The other thing is, too, you had down power lines. You had live power lines everywhere. So you don't know what's hot, what's not. So you've got to be very careful in situations like that. And the fact that there were broken glass, nails. I mean, it was a trip hazard, a safety hazard. So it's like you can easily be hurt in a situation just as much as everybody else is down there.
Absolutely. We are talking to Mike LoCascio, award-winning photojournalist for ABC News. When we come back, we will talk to Mike about the ever-changing political scene in Illinois, news ethics, and the lighter side of journalism. You're listening to Word of Mouth. We'll be back right after this. And you're listening to Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich. We're talking to Mike LoCascio, award-winning news videographer for Channel 7. And in the background, you hear the eerie song, I'd Love to Change the World. Excuse me. I'd Love to Change the World. And that came out 10, actually, it's by 10 years after. It came out in 1971, Mike. You might be wondering why I'm playing that song. That was featured in the film Nightcrawler, starring Jake Gyllenhaal as that creepy cameraman who shoots sensational and graphic camera footage for TV stations for a high price. Very, very different than what you do as a living, but I was wondering if you had seen it or your colleagues had seen it or you know about it, but you know, it's basically about guys that go out there and get this graphic footage and then sell it.
You know, I have not seen the movie. It was one of the movies that I did mean to see. Mm-hmm. And like everything,
you're too busy doing your job.
You don't have time.
Right.
So probably wait for it to come out on video. But it's funny because I know the premise of the movie, and it's based on what we call stringers.
Yes, yes, yes.
And there are stringers, especially in Chicago. There are stringers because most stations, in fact, all the stations, don't have a photog staff 24/7. The last crews go home after the 10 o'clock show, which is probably about 11:30 at night once they put everything away. So you have these independent photogs who monitor scanners throughout the night. They get tips through social media or other sources of crime that's going on around the city at night, maybe an accident, maybe a fire, and they will sell it to the stations for a fee. And mm-hmm. and a lot of times the stations will buy it, especially for the morning newscast, because for the morning shows you have in some cases 4 maybe 5 hours of coverage that you need to fill. So a stringer video is very crucial to filling that time slot, and that actually, depending upon what happens overnight, that actually may be the story that the station is working on for the morning show with their morning crews.
Right, right. In the film, I don't want to get too off track, but he basically will stage different things, move bodies, things like that before the police get there or the first responders, and it just kind of shows how, you know, it's an exaggerated look at what could happen.
It's the Brian Williams version of photography, I guess.
Wow. Well, actually,
it's
okay.
I couldn't miss the opportunity.
I'm sure other people who are listening are thinking of that as well as we're talking about when the word ethical comes up. And we can segue to that now. Brian Williams, so what are your colleagues thinking about? Maybe we should, for anyone who may not be familiar with Brian Williams, NBC News anchor, who misremembered an important story that
That's the new buzzword now, yes.
Oh, is it? Okay.
That's the new buzzword, yes.
That's a quotation from him. Misremembered basically the accuracy of a story that occurred when he was covering a dramatic event in Iraq. Where he said he was under fire in a helicopter, if I believe, Army aircraft. And anyway, bottom line is he lied several times in his blog on different shows when he would appear as a celebrity on talk shows. And it's become a real problem, so much that they've suspended him and basically put NBC to shame. So how are your fellow colleagues, fellow journalists looking at this? We can dovetail this for a second.
None of us have really ever had a conversation regarding the Brian Williams. It's out there. You know it's out there. I have never met Mr. Williams, so I don't really have an opinion about it. If what he did is true, that he did lie, then yes, you did. He did cross a line, a very severe line. In our industry, and we kind of go by the rule that the story is not about you, and I like to tell that to interns. I like to tell that to anybody who will listen, that the story that you're covering is not about you. Meaning it's not about the reporter, it's not about the photographer, it's about the subject that you're covering. And when you inject yourself into the story, then you've kind of crossed the line, at least in my opinion.
You know what's interesting about that? That's tough, though, because an anchor kind of represents a network, or in your case, at Channel 7,
sure.
I think of Ron Majors. So the fact if he's got his rolled-up sleeves and he's somewhere, he is even subtly part of the story.
You are, but what you're really making it clear that you're delivering the news. You don't... I'm not a big fan in editorializing a story. I believe in telling the story as it happens, from point A to point B to point C, wherever the story goes. I'm a big fan in that. I don't believe in editorializing. I do remember back in the days when you had editorials, but you didn't editorialize a story. You had a separate person who came in, who was maybe your editor-in-chief or whoever, who actually gave an editorial about a topic or about a subject matter, whatever. But to editorialize a story, it really, in my opinion, crosses a line. And we're starting to see a lot more of that, unfortunately. You're seeing a lot more of that, where you're seeing, especially with the 24/7 news cycles that you have out there, you're starting to see a lot more of this kind of behavior.
Social media
is another one, but... but you're starting to see a lot more people injecting themselves into the story where they really have no business. It's about telling the story. It's not about being part of the story.
I have a question then. It's getting kind of fuzzy how to define the term journalist.
Right.
And I just brought up social media. For example, is a blogger now a journalist?
Does it
come down to third person? I mean, in a way, that's what you were just saying. Don't inject yourself in the story. In other words, you're talking as an observer. You're reporting the story. Avoid using the word I, as Brian Williams did in his case. What do you think? That's a hard definition. I think it was easier years ago, and now it's a little more difficult.
It used to be a lot years ago, everything was defined. You had newspaper, you had radio, and you had television. Now you have this – I don't want to say it's a new invention, but it's a recent invention it's taken off, especially within the last 3 or 4 years, social media, which has become a game changer when it comes to covering the news. Because if you think about what journalism used to be, it used to be 4, 5, 6, and 10 o'clock. It was appointment television. It was appointment news. And then you would pick up your paper the next day. That's how you got your news, or you had radio updates in your car. But that was really about it. So if you wanted to get your news for the day, you had to wait until the newscast came on. Now, with the invention of social media and with cell phones, with everybody having a cell phone, now news is instant. It's not necessarily accurate, as we see every day, but it's instant. So you can get instant updates about any story that's going on from any number of sources, whether it be a blogger, whether it be a news operation, whether it be a paper or radio station. I mean, it's all out there. They're all out there. And we're starting to see more and more when you go to cover, especially big stories, you're starting to see blog sites be let in as accredited journalists, especially at political events, because
do you see that as a problem or additive?
No, it's just it's an additive. It's mm-hmm. just another editorial body that you're seeing at these events that are coming in and covering these events.
For example, what are you seeing that you didn't see before? I mean, a specific organization.
Oh,
or there's so many.
There are just so many. You know, I think back to when I started, when you would go to an event and let's say it was a political event and it was a press conference, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be you'd have a handful of cameras from the stations, a couple of people from radio, a couple of people from newspaper, and that was it. So you'd maybe have 10 or 15 people in the room. Now you've got probably upwards of 40 or 50 people in a room covering a press conference or an event.
Jeez.
Because now everybody's got little handheld cameras. Everybody's got a blog site. Everybody's got a social media site. And people want the coverage. So if it's social media, if it's blog, no matter what kind of coverage it is, in their opinion, it's coverage. And so a lot of times they are accredited as journalists and they're brought in and let in to cover these events. And there are some really good bloggers. There are some really good social media sites out there that are legitimate journalism operations.
Are you seeing anything that has maybe provoked journalists like yourself? Where they didn't get it right? I guess what I'm driving at is the definition of journalist now. I think it's become a little more difficult, hasn't it?
The biggest problem that
I guess we can't really do it anymore.
I guess the biggest problem that we face is it's all about who's going to be first to break the news, and mm-hmm. you always have that one person or that one group that wants to be the first to break a story, and a lot of times, just because you're first doesn't necessarily mean you're right. We've seen a lot of times where information is not accurate. The facts aren't correct, not purposely, but just people are so anxious to be the first to tell or the first to break the news, so to speak, that they don't necessarily get the story right, which then makes our jobs even harder because now you have to go out and make sure that every fact that you have is accurate. We're already doing that as it is, obviously. But now your facts are going to come into question because somebody else's facts were not.
Exactly.
And it makes our job a lot tougher because people viewing audience, your listeners, the people who read your sites, they're going to start questioning whether your stuff is legit, whether your stuff is right. They're going to question whether the stuff that we're putting on the air, is it right? And so it's in the best interest of everybody to make sure that the story's right rather than first.
You just mentioned earlier you were talking about going to a press conference and press releases.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you do the political scene has changed in Illinois.
Oh, tremendously.
In fact, last time you were here, I was just thinking President Obama had just been inaugurated.
Right. He had
so
just
it's been
come
a couple
off of
years.
The second term, yes.
Yeah. And and Pat Quinn was the
He was the governor.
Was the governor. Yeah. So now we have a new governor, Bruce Rauner,
mm-hmm.
and Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel faces a runoff election next month. The political scene's changing, as we just said. So you've been in the opportunity. You've had an opportunity to be up close and personal. We just talked about social media and press conferences. So what's your observations covering these high profile politicians?
The new way of doing politics is to do everything through a press release because politicians are doing everything they can to control their message anymore. And I understand why they want to, but you have a responsibility as a public official to meet with the press, because the press is, we're the eyes and ears for the constituents. It's not like Governor Rauner, Mayor Emanuel can go into each and every home in the state of Illinois or in the city of Chicago and sit down and share their plans with their constituents. So that's where the media comes in. But what they are doing more and more is, rather than take questions, they issue everything in form. They issue answers in form of press release. Or what they do is they sort of just dodge the media. They'll have a media availability. Let's say they'll do a press conference to announce a new program or to sign a bill. And then as soon as it's done, they immediately get up off the stage and then walk away and walk out a back door, out of sight from the cameras.
So other politicians have been doing this. This has been going on for years.
Yeah, it's more prevalent now. It's a lot more prevalent now. And it's
spin doctors.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. But it's getting a lot worse as time goes on. In fact, you just down in Indiana, the governor of Indiana just tried and failed to create Indiana's own state controlled media that would control the governor's message. And
this is like Putin.
This was a whole new operation that he started. He hired two people. It was a $100,000 operation in which they would issue press releases. So if you were the media and you had a question for the governor, you were directed to, or the plan was, you would be directed to this site. And you would be given a press release or a video press release in which a controlled answer would be given to you. So it was designed so that you couldn't ask questions of the governor. It was designed so that you couldn't question bills. It was designed so you couldn't question what your government is doing. And it received a backlash almost immediately from all over the world. And within a matter of days, the whole idea was scrapped. And they said, well, it was just a big misunderstanding, and we're not going to do this anymore. And they're going back to the old way of holding press conferences when they can.
I mean, that is just wild. I mean, that is Putin. Yeah.
That's kind of where we're seeing politics go. It used to be when during an election, the candidates want as much press coverage as possible. So they are just out and about. They're more than happy to talk to you. They'll stop. They'll talk your ear off. They'll answer your questions. And once the election is over, you can't get the time of day with a lot of these guys.
So, that was happening with Blago, too.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing.
He was the king of run and hide.
Yeah, we need to talk about him.
But you know what? He was fun to cover, though. I got to say, there was nothing like covering a Blagojevich press conference, because Blagojevich used to walk into a room probably no bigger than this studio, and there'd be 15, 20 people, cameras. But he would walk in and he would wave like there were 20,000 in the room, and he would smile and he would point and would wink, and we would all sit and we'd just kind of turn and look around us and wonder, like, who is he pointing at? Who is he smiling at? Who is he winking at? And it was all a big show to him, because he always envisioned himself walking into this mass crowd of adoring people. And that's how his press conferences were. Not to mention the fact that he was always 2 hours late for his press conferences. It was never fail. You could set your watch. If he said, I'll be there at 1 o'clock for a press conference, you knew you had at least 2 hours to go get lunch and then come back in time to meet him at 3 for a press conference.
I tell you what, he's going to be very late for his next press conference.
Yeah, well, yes. I think 12 years now is what's left.
Is that what it is now?
I think we're down to about 12 years. Yeah.
Jeez, yeah. We are talking to Mike LoCascio, award-winning photojournalist for ABC News. And you're listening to Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich. More after this. And the Eagles, Dirty Laundry. I tell you, I haven't given you a break today with the bumper music, have I?
That's a great song, though.
Nightcrawler,
yeah.
Dirty Laundry, boy. Anyway, we are talking to Mike LoCascio, award-winning news videographer for Channel 7, and We have been talking. We've covered a lot of ground, and but there's some things we haven't covered today. And we've talked about the dramatic when you were covering the horrible tornado incident, and also we've talked about the change in Illinois political scene,
right.
Social media. You know, what is journalism now? And one thing we haven't really got into, and I teased earlier, was kind of the lighter side. You know, occasionally you do some really lights uplifting stories. Any come to mind?
Just about anyone that I cover with Frank Mathey on occasion.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know, Frank Mathey is
he's been an institution.
Yeah, anybody who watches Channel 7 knows Frank Mathey, and they know a Frank Mathey story when they see it. And I've covered some pretty interesting stories with Frank. One that comes to mind is when they removed the when they tore down the old Kiddylands just across the street from Maywood Park years ago.
Oh, yeah. My kids used to go there.
I did, too. Yeah. I had some great pictures from there. But
yeah.
They took the old wooden roller coaster that they had there, which I believe was called the Little Dipper, and they, Great America, Six Flags, purchased it, rebuilt it, and put it right in the middle of the park. And they invited Frank to come and take a ride on it. Well, Frank is just petrified at roller coasters, even little roller coasters. So it was, and I think the first drop is only like three stories. It's not even that far of a drop. But watching Frank get into a roller coaster and actually filming it and watching his reaction as he goes up the hill and comes down, because I put a wireless mic on him. And,
oh, how fun.
And they let me go up the little catwalk that goes along the very edge of the coaster as it goes to the top when it makes its climb. And I got some great shots of Frank coming up, and it's priceless material. I mean, to see him just like wincing as he's looking even over like a three-story drop versus, say, with some of these monster roller coasters that are out there now that are like 15, 20 stories.
Sure,
I mean,
sure,
but
yeah.
It's just,
this
but,
is what makes
but,
it so
but,
fun.
But
yeah.
that's what makes the story fun. And yeah. you go home at the end of the day and you're like, wow, that was a fun story to cover.
You know, you were telling me earlier, a few weeks ago, a woman who was shot in the leg.
Oh, God.
What was that all about? I didn't really – all he told me is, you know, that would be a neat thing to talk about. What happened there?
You know, it kind of says a lot about what our society's become. But I was with a good friend of mine, reporter Evelyn Holmes, and we were working a story about a house fire that happened on a winter day maybe 2-3 years ago. And the story itself was about a father who had rescued his kids from this fire because, unfortunately, the kids were playing with matches. They set the couch on fire. But he got everybody out, and he was having to toss them out of windows and stuff. But everybody survived. Well, by the time we got there, most of the scene was cleared. And we were kind of really getting nowhere with the story. We were trying to find anybody who knew the family. Long story short, we're driving away. And we're in a live truck. Now, the live trucks tend to create a circus-like atmosphere because you have a big Channel 7 logo all over the side and people recognize you. And so it's not uncommon for people to call you out or to come up and give you a story idea or ask if you've got a certain reporter in the truck with you. It's not uncommon. So we heard a voice from somebody screaming, "Hey, Channel 7, Channel 7." And I looked in the mirror and we thought, well, you know, maybe she's with the family. So we threw it in reverse. We backed up. And she comes up to the window, and right away we knew that we had a problem because she wasn't related to the family, but she said, you know, "I got a story for you guys." And we said, okay, we'll listen to you.
So this is something you've heard?
Oh, all the time. Yeah,
infinitum.
All the time.
Okay.
The time. But yeah, we'll listen to you. And she says, "I need you to do a story about me." And we said, "Well, what's your story?" And she's like, "Well, they just shot me 4 times, and they... I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. They shot me 4 times a week ago, and they just shot me again in the leg."
What?
I said, "Okay, well, you need to call the police about that." She's like, "No, I'm not talking to the police. I want Channel 7 to do my story. They shot me in the butt 4 times last week, and they just shot me again in the leg." And I said, "Well, wait a minute. Are you telling me that you're shot now?" She's like, "Yes." I said, "No, come on." And so she threw her leg up in the window. On the driver's side, on the passenger side door, the window was rolled down. So she throws her leg up and she starts rolling back her pant leg and they're jeans. Now I can see there's a hole in there and I'm like, it's a bullet hole. You can tell. You've seen enough of them. And then she rolls back, and sure enough, she's shot in the leg, just above the ankle. And she's bleeding, and she's holding it together with scotch tape. She's got it wrapped around two or three times with scotch tape. I said, you need to go to the hospital. I said, we're not doing a story on you. You need to go to the hospital.
Well, this is just, I mean, in a way, it's kind of Jerry Springer-ish.
Oh, yeah. But,
and a little pathetic.
But
now that I know, I didn't know the details. Okay, so what did you do?
We finally convinced her that because of the fact that the story that we were trying to cover, which was a house fire, there was still fire department personnel around.
Sure.
Paramedics.
Sure.
And we said, you need to go see one of those firemen over there, or a paramedic, because you really need to be in the hospital.
Oh, so there was a first responder right there.
There was somebody there,
okay,
yeah.
Okay,
and
good.
She's like, no, I want you to, I said, ma'am, we're not doing a story about you being shot. You need to go to the hospital and get that taken care of. And I said, it's got to hurt. She's like, yeah, kind of.
Oh, my gosh.
She was in shock.
She
eventually put her leg down, and we watched, made sure that she went and talked to the fire department, but we watched her just kind of hobble down the street, and we just it was one of those where you just shake your head going, wow, how is this possible?
Maybe the grasp of reality TV, yeah, and people who want to get on the air.
I'm just glad she didn't show me where she was shot a week before.
Yeah, oh, jeez. I tell you, it just shows your job has so many variables.
Oh, yeah.
Another variable is the Chicago sports scene.
Yes.
And quick question. I mean, you have an opportunity to cover the Bears and the Bulls.
Yeah, I do travel a lot with the teams.
And the Hawks and so on and so forth. Just a quick question. So what's been your experience covering lately the Chicago Bears and Jay Cutler and basically a new general manager, new coach? What do you think?
Haven't had an opportunity to meet the new coach or the general manager. What I've seen so far, I'm impressed with.
What about Cutler then? So
that whole scene last year was a train wreck. I mean, there's just no denying the fact that it was a train wreck. And going to the games, and it got to the point of where when you cover football, you usually stand in front of the offense because you want to catch the play as it's coming towards you, as the offense is moving downfield. It got to the point of where I knew that Cutler was going to get sacked or the Bears were going to turn it over, that I actually started standing behind the offense and watching Cutler get sacked and watching him throw interceptions and watching him walk off the field in disgust. And that was my best footage of the year, unfortunately, for the Bears, was watching Cutler get destroyed on the field. And I was at that New England game where they just got pummeled.
Oh, my gosh.
They got pummeled.
Yeah. You were covering that then.
I went to New England to cover that.
Okay.
I went to the last game of the season up in Minnesota, and it wasn't even so much about the Bears game. It was more about who's going to be employed on Monday and who's not going to be employed. So it was more about, you know, let's get as many shots of Mark Trestman as we can. Let's get as many shots of the coaches or Phil Emery, because it wasn't about the game anymore. The season was done, and there was no point to really shooting the game. So you were really going up there to write an obituary, so to speak, for the coaching staff and for a handful of players that you knew come Monday or Tuesday weren't going to be around anymore.
So the Chicago sports teams that you cover, and you cover them all, basically you cover, you know, a wide variety of stories as we see. Who's your favorite sports team to cover?
I've actually got two, they're first class to deal with, both the Bulls and the Blackhawks. My experience with both of those teams has been just first rate, and I can't say enough nice things about dealing not only with the players and the coaches, but also a lot of the behind-the-scenes people that work in the office with those organizations.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
That's great to hear.
They're very receptive. They're media savvy, and they know what we're trying to do. We know what we're trying to do, and there's a really good relationship that goes on between those two teams and the media in town.
Mike, I think I got to about six of my 30 questions.
Oh, that's okay.
Plum ran out of time. Thank you so much. It's been a really, really fascinating time. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
If you wish to contact Mike LoCascio, photojournalist for Channel 7, visit the website wls-tv.com. And thank you for tuning in. I hope you'll drop by again next Thursday. at 11 a.m. when we talk to another captivating guest on Word of Mouth.